Welcome to the Mint Euro Special 2016 podcast. Over the next 30 days, Ankit Prasad will take you through some of the most exciting happenings from on and off the football field.
Hello and welcome to European Nights, a show about football. Today is Thursday, the 30th of June, and I'm Ankit Prasad. You know everything that has happened up until this point? The extended group stage, the race to be a top third place team that ensured that most sides were conservative in attack, the round of 16, which is unnatural in the Euros but was accepted nonetheless under the premise that more football is good. Well, all that is over and we're back to our traditional European Championship standby of 8 teams and the quarterfinal round. Sure, 44 matches have been played and there's a pretty square average of 2 goals per match, and all of this and more causes people to say things like, "Oh, but this time the competition hasn't been very good," or "there are no really good teams." But the truth is that statements like that are either premature or completely untrue, or both. First off, the number of goals or draws needn't have anything to do with whether the tournament has been good or not. After all, Portugal have drawn all their matches in regular time, but theirs has been the most compelling story to follow, what with 20 plus shots a game in the league round and all the frustration and the problems at the back. Also, thankfully, in the first round, the biggest margin of victory was by just 3 goals, and that too happened just thrice. That means that there were fewer mismatches and more competition, and once you begin to factor in all the late goals and upsets and things of that nature, you'll begin to see that Euro 2016 has so far been a tournament worth sitting back and appreciating. More classy and restrained, but with its moments, like an opera, rather than mindless and full of meaningless goals like a teen sex comedy. As this Premier League season taught us, a lot of teams have got very technically and tactically astute, and there are no easy pickings these days, and that's an incredible place to be in the knockout rounds. Needless to say, the final 7 matches are the most important, and how good or bad this tournament will be are dependent on what happens next. On this occasion, the draw is rather open, and it would take a brave and or foolish person to put their money on a winner, especially given that Italy and Germany are playing each other for a place in the final 4. In the previous round, it was clear that one half of the draw contained some very powerful teams while the other didn't, but Spain and England's elimination has balanced things out. In fact, the chart at the moment could even be said to contain good collective teams on one side and superstar players on the other, and this makes things very exciting. It's effectively Ronaldo, Lewandowski, Hazard and Gareth Bale plus sidekicks versus Germany, Italy, France and Iceland. Of course, it isn't strictly that way. Germany and France also have players of the same caliber, while the likes of Lewandowski are superstars because of their previous exploits rather than anything they've managed this summer in France. However, as a narrative, it's enormously appealing, and you hope that sooner rather than later, everyone will be firing on all cylinders. However, it's best if we settle this properly. At this stage in the 2012 tournament, Portugal were taking on the Czech Republic, which is similar to but not as good as how Portugal played Croatia in the last round. Spain were playing France, and while that sounds appealing given how strong Spain were 4 years ago and how rubbish France were then, it's really a lot of hoo-ha about nothing. Germany played Greece, which was interesting because of the whole Eurozone muddle that Greece was causing back then, and England were playing Italy, which sounds like a good matchup until of course the football begins and the best moment of skill arrives in the penalty shootout when Andrea Pirlo, by dint of being Andrea Pirlo, becomes globally renowned for scoring a Panenka penalty that someone else, whose name was Panenka by the way, had invented decades earlier. The 2012 tournament quarterfinals were completely predictable, and while you may argue that the resulting semi-final draw, that is Spain vs Portugal and Germany vs Italy, was everything you'd want at that stage, once you remember that the first one ended in a penalty shootout after a goalless 2 hours, and the other saw the capitulation of a quite wonderful Germany side, thus robbing us of a real final, you'll begin to realize that the tournament got progressively worse as it approached the end. Euro 2008 was far better in that respect. Portugal played Germany, and while no side was really dominant, they did serve up a great match. Croatia played Turkey, and it was because of the promise that those two sides had shown in that tournament that we were so excited about them being drawn together this time round. The Netherlands met Russia, and while that may sound like a mismatch, it was anything but, as the world was introduced to an Andre Ashravin, who for a brief period that year looked like he may be Europe's answer to Lionel Messi. And in the last quarterfinal, then world champions Italy handed the baton to Spain, and we hope you won't argue too much if we say that Italy drawing goallessly versus Spain is a lot more enticing than Italy drawing goallessly versus England. The Euro 2008 last 8 were tons of fun, and they gave us a pretty awesome final few matches in the tournament. So between the heavyweight encounters of Polkrane 2012 and the more seminal encounters of Austria-Switzerland 2008, we know which we'd prefer. And the great thing is that this tournament combines a bit of both. Belgium and Wales are best when they're playing at an electric pace, and Germany-Italy has all the makings of a true footballing classic. Even France will have to dig deep to beat an Iceland side that fears no one and possesses the most potent attacking move in the tournament so far, a long throw-in. And Portugal versus Poland, well, we'll get to that. So if you like the sound of big names and pedigrees and want to see teams steamroller their way through, all the way through, then this has the scope for that. Not all that much, but enough. But if what you really want is to see some great players go hammer and tongs because it's really that open, then there hasn't been a cup like this for a little while. And now would be a good time to sit up and take notice. Tonight's opening quarterfinal sees Portugal lining up against Poland at the Stade Velodrome at 12:30. Now there are three ways to look at this encounter. The first is in terms of history, the second is basis the pedigree of their best players, and the third is within the scope of this tournament. History-wise, you'll be surprised to know that Poland and Portugal aren't exactly strangers in the big competitions. They've actually met at the World Cup on two occasions, and we don't have to go back to the 1930s either. The first time was in Mexico 86, when they were drawn together in the group stage along with Messrs England and Morocco. That group had turned out to be crazy. Morocco drew versus England and Poland, but then Portugal beat England, Poland beat Portugal, and England beat Poland. And in the very final game, Morocco defeated Portugal. So Morocco went through as winners, England second, and Poland also made it as a top third place team. Poor Portugal went out. Unfortunately, Poland met Portugal's good friends Brazil in the round of 16, who beat them 4-0, and so there ended that. Then in the 2002 World Cup, both sides were drawn together in the group stage along with South Korea and the US, and all in all, the Koreans ran away with it. They drew with the US, but they beat Poland 2-0, and Park Ji-sung scored the only goal of the game versus Portugal. The Portuguese hammered Poland 4-0, but both sides exited as Europe lowered its head in shame. Given this knowledge, we're pretty sure both are quite happy to be paired against each other in the knockout this time around. In that sense, the pressure is off Poland, as this tournament has been an unqualified success. The best they've ever done, but the joy of knockout football is to be able to dream, and dream they shall. But for that, they need their best player. They need Robert Lewandowski. Versus the Swiss, who aren't very good, Poland took a first half lead and then offered almost nothing themselves. The stats may not reflect that because Arkadiusz Milik is more like a Portuguese player in the way that he feels that if he shoots, then the ball will be magnetically drawn into the goal. But really, if Switzerland are coming at you with everything they've got and you're not trying to hit them with a quick counter while their central defenders are otherwise occupied in your box, then the only logical solution is that you don't have the firepower to put the game to bed. Against Portugal, if such a scenario emerges, then we're not sure what Poland will do. Nani and Ronaldo like nothing more than being invited to take a pop, and you can be sure that it won't take a once-in-a-lifetime overhead kick like Shaqiri's to break Poland's resistance this time. Also, there is the small matter of Portugal somewhat needlessly having unlocked their defensive capability versus Croatia. Who would have known that if you replace a 38-year-old in the center of your defense with a player 15 years his junior, things appear less creaky. Ricardo Carvalho may well have further part to play at these championships, especially if there are any injuries to Portugal's troubled backline. But if Fernando Santos doesn't have to call on him for what remains, he'll be a happy man. So with Portugal's defense more solid than before, and the attack still firing, and Poland having treated Switzerland like they were Brazil earlier, it's not looking like the Poles have much choice tactically than to go for it. They could line up like for like to Portugal, Lewandowski and Milik versus Ronaldo and Nani, and provided the remaining members of their teams also do their jobs, it's a good matchup. Together, Poland's pair have scored 66 goals in 93 matches this season for Bayern Munich and Ajax. That's a frightening return and serves as a reminder of what they can potentially do. On the other hand, the Portuguese winger striker scored 63 goals, that's 3 fewer from 95 matches for Real Madrid and Fenerbahce. In terms of supporting cast, there's only one player on both sides who can come on from the bench and really change the game, and that's Croatia's vanquisher Ricardo Quaresma, and he's vital if Portugal go down or the game needs to be stretched some more. The way things have gone so far, and given that of the two sides, only Portugal have made good on their attacking potential, it's hard to see Poland getting through this. But Ronaldo will know better than anyone to not take Lewandowski lightly. The year was 2013, and the two Spanish giants, Real Madrid and Barcelona, had been drawn against the two really hot German sides, Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. Barca weren't having their best season, owing mainly to the health of their then coach, the late Tito Villanova, and the fitness of Lionel Messi, and they went to the Allianz Arena and were thrashed 4-0, an unprecedented scoreline given that this is Barca we were talking about. The following day, Real went to Dortmund, and knowing Real Madrid fans must already have been wondering what they'll do versus Bayern in the final, until the 8th minute of the game when Robert Lewandowski snuck ahead of Pepe at the far post and knocked in a dangerous cross. That woke Real up and they tried hard for an equalizer, and Ronaldo would eventually get it at the end of the first half to bring his side level. At the beginning of the second, it seemed that Dortmund's resistance was at an end, but Jurgen Klopp's side had other ideas. In the 50th minute, some slack defending by Madrid allowed Lewandowski to receive the ball just outside the 6-yard box, and he instinctively tucked the ball in, even as the Madrid defenders appealed for offside. The goal stood though. Then just 5 minutes later, there could be no doubt. A wavered shot by Dortmund managed to find itself to Lewandowski, who controlled it on the spin, continued spinning, took it away from a desperate lunge by Pepe, and artfully dug the ball out of his feet to find the roof of the net. It was ninja-esque, and it put Dortmund 3-1 up. Lewandowski had his hat-trick, but he wasn't done. Marco Reus was brought down by Xavi Alonso in the box, and Lewandowski stepped up and smashed the resulting penalty straight down the middle of the goal, with the keeper seemingly diving out of the way. Madrid were shell-shocked at having lost 4-1, and though they won the return leg at the Bernabeu 2-0, they fell a goal short, and Dortmund made it through. They would go on to lose to Bayern Munich in the final after an incredible match that was settled in the final minutes by Arjen Robben. But the world was in awe of Dortmund, and it was in awe of Lewandowski. Ronaldo and Pepe will remember the damage he can do if he's given an inch of space, and they will be wary of his ability to score goals in quick succession. He scored 5 goals in 9 minutes in one game this season, and Portugal don't want to be at the receiving end of that kind of drubbing. We hope he comes alive in this game though, and we get to see two of the most fearsome goal scorers in Europe face off. Ronaldo has the edge with his team and his ability to make chances for himself, but then he's also very wasteful and has a propensity for self-harm, while Lewandowski is cool and liquid like a cucumber soup. We're going for a 2-2 draw in normal time, with Lewandowski settling it in extra time. And now, before we go, we have a treat for you. Here is Nani giving himself a pre-match pep talk.
Okay, first check here. Does it still read N? Yes. Is it prominent enough? Looks like. Then why isn't everyone else in France also copying? I had thought that some people may not, especially those whose name starts with P. After all, who would like to have P written on their head? But anyway, I will ask the ref. Maybe he will give me a free kick. I have always enjoyed splitting free kick duties with Cristiano. It has always been this way. He take one, then I take one, and so on. Today, if he makes a goal for me, then I will make a goal for him. After all, we must respect each other equally. I am also have 100 caps for Portugal now. I am no longer little Nani, who is like Cristiano, only worse in every way. Those days are gone. I am now a superstar. And my name is Luis Almeida de Cunha, who the world knows as Nani. And this tournament will be my ticket to glory. I will first win player of the tournament and earn a move back to Manchester, where I will of course be captain. And I will also ask Cristiano to join as my vice captain. In fact, I will ask him for the armband today also. He said that I could have it in the next game, but I don't like how Pepe laughed. He thinks he's Cristiano's best friend now because they went together at Madrid. I showed Pepe. Told him Lewandowski would make him look stupid and called him a baldy. They are all jealous of Nani's hair. Anyway, now it's time to go. I have to score a hat-trick today and win my bet with Cristiano. We've been thinking of putting limit on our shots, but most of them go in anyway, so why bother? I am the best in the world. Messi and Ronaldo think of me in their nightmares, and I am the most beautiful football player. I am Nani.